Good morning, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome to UBS's Top of the Morning podcast. So today's conversation will focus on the latest edition of the ongoing Election Watch publication series, and the latest edition outlines how to position portfolios ahead of the November election. And joining me here on the line for the conversation this morning, pleased to welcome back Tom McLaughlin. Tom is the head of Fixed Income Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. So, Tom, good morning to you. Welcome back, and looking forward to our conversation today.
Good morning, Dan. It's good to be back.
And Tom, congratulations to you and the team on the recent publication. I do want to point out to our listeners, and especially our clients, the most recent edition as well as additional related resources can also be located up on ubs.com/Election Watch. Though if you are a client of UBS listening in, you can simply always reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of Election Watch directly. But Tom, I know if we reflect on the first half of the year, very tumultuous. It's been a challenging time for the American voter, and there are many unknowns ahead of us. So maybe to set the foundation for our conversation, can you speak to what market and economic conditions look like today and how it all translates to current voter sentiment?
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. And thanks again for having me on the program. It's going to come as no surprise, I suppose, to any of the listeners this morning that the current recession is the worst we've experienced in 90 years. But putting aside the human cost of the economic recession, with which we should always be concerned, there are some unique aspects to the current downturn. But, you know, the social distancing measures led to a collapse in retail sales, and that triggered a painful close to 15% unemployment rate in April. This, I would characterize this, Dan, as a true service sector recession in the U.S. history. But the effects of the abrupt slowdown quickly spread from there, and it led to a temporary collapse in energy prices, a slowdown in industrial production as well. And, of course, by the very nature of the pandemic, this is a global event. No country spared, and there isn't a single region of the world available to serve as an engine for a very rapid recovery. The U.S. consumer in the past has often served as that engine, but is not going to be able to do so this time around. So the unemployment rate surpassed what we experienced in 2008 and 2009. It peaked at just shy of 15%. I think it was 14.7%, and arguably might have been a little bit understated. We believe they're not going to return to levels that we saw as recently as 6 months ago for another year and a half. As far as voter sentiment goes, it's not surprising that the Trump administration has taken a big hit in the polls. As we discussed in the report you mentioned at the top of the program, betting markets saw President Trump as the favorite over Biden until about a month ago, even though the former vice president was actually ahead in the polls. Now, this was probably, we suspect, due to the expectation that Trump would win the Electoral College if the popular vote was close. But Biden's advantage in the polls has increased during the month of June and early July. And as a result, the betting markets are now showing there's a high probability of what we call a blue wave, where the former vice president wins the next election and the Senate flips to Democratic control. So at this point, and it's a long way to go yet, but at this point, we could have a change in government and a unified government in November. But again, with the caveat that 4 months is a very long period of time for a presidential campaign.
Tom, with all of that in mind, and also it's very well documented how the pandemic triggered a lot of volatility in the markets over the past few months, but to what extent should investors anticipate market volatility leading up to and even post the election in November?
Well, you know, it's in the equity markets, that volatility is already evident. It's less so in the fixed income markets, but I would point one statistic, which we actually included in the report. Four of the seven largest daily moves in the S&P 500 in the past 50 years has occurred in the past 5 months. So it does give you a sense that we're in a position where the equity markets have certainly become more volatile. The other reference points, by the way, I said four of the seven, the other three occurred in either 1987, which people may recall, and then again in 2008-9. So the equity markets have certainly experienced that. Much of it is attributable to the pandemic, of course, But I think investors are also beginning to examine the widely divergent economic policies of the two presidential candidates. You know, policy uncertainty has long been associated with equity market volatility. So whatever adverse impact has been caused by COVID-19 is only exaggerated by the fact that we have a presidential election on the horizon. What's more interesting probably is the lower degree of volatility that we've actually seen in the fixed income markets. Municipal bonds, for example, have barely moved in weeks. And what movement we've seen in the corporate bond prices have tended to be on the upside and generally incremental. The difference, I think, between the equity markets and the fixed income markets is that the Fed's monetary policy has been unprecedented in support of risk assets, high yield corporate bonds, investment grade corporate bonds and the like. So when we talk about volatility thus far, we're really talking about the equity markets, where the prospect of tighter regulations under a Democratic president might have a more immediate impact on some of the companies with equities in the market.
Tom, within the publication, it does outline several outcome scenarios. I know you shared with us a few moments ago what the betting markets as of today are pointing to, but can you walk us through some of these outcome scenarios as well as the implications of each to maybe the macro environment, but also asset classes? I know within you highlight fixed income as well as equities. What can you share with us there?
Yeah, sure. Well, there are four probable outcomes to the November election. I say probable, given that we believe the Democrats will retain control of the House of Representatives. So if you assume that the Dems will hold the House, the first one you look at then, of course, is, and this is the one that the betting markets believe at this point anyway to be the most likely, is a blue wave. And that is the former vice president winning the presidency and the Senate reverting to Democratic control. Now, as I said earlier, 4 months is an eternity in a presidential campaign, so we always have to keep that in mind and things can change. But to the extent that it does happen, that Biden wins and the Senate goes Democratic, we would expect the new administration to push for a major healthcare initiative, to pursue tighter environmental regulations. And they will, I think, attempt to raise taxes, with, I think, corporate taxes the most susceptible to an increase. One thing to keep in mind, of course, is that moving legislation through the Senate can sometimes be difficult. Fiscal legislation is always a challenge, and you do have the filibuster still in place. Whether or not a new Democratic majority, if it does happen, if it does come to pass, decides to abolish the filibuster is an open question. We often consult with our colleagues in the Office of Public Policy on that question, and it's unclear at this point whether they will pursue it. And that will have an impact on the ability of any Democratic administration to pursue those higher taxes. Now, another outcome is what we call the status quo, with Trump squeaking out of victory and the GOP hanging on to the Senate. If that happens, we would look for the president to push for a tax cut or to at least make some of the provisions of the 2017 Tax Act permanent. That is to say, the president would pursue regulatory oversight that's more lenient, which is, again, an extension of the current administration's policies, but might pursue a more adversarial relationship with China. The remaining options are Biden winning but facing a GOP-held Senate, or the alternative, which is Trump winning but the GOP losing the Senate, either one of which is less likely, but particularly the Trump winning and the GOP losing the Senate, that's a pretty low odds scenario. But in either case, where you've got the split government or split administration between the presidency and one house of Congress, legislative gridlock inevitably results, and you end up having government by regulation, where, as we've seen the last couple of years, where the policies of any administration, whether it be Biden or Trump, without having a unified Congress, is forced to basically employ or influence government policy through direct regulation.
There's quite a few outcome scenarios, all of which carry with them their own implications. And as you've been mentioning, Tom, 4 months between now and the election, so that is an eternity when you consider how much runway we have ahead of us, and anything can happen. So in terms of positioning portfolios ahead of the election, Tom, what should investors keep in mind, and how should investors think about approaching allocation? I guess, put another way, should the election be a determining factor when considering asset allocation right now?
Well, at this point, probably not yet. the election certainly looms large in the consciousness of investors, and that's pretty natural. It should not be the single biggest factor that an investor should use to build an investment portfolio. It's really too early. But, you know, I would suggest don't make any abrupt changes to your portfolio at this point. It's early. I would, however, suggest that investors follow what we call the 3L principles, which I know you've had my colleague Michael Crook on the program in the past, and it's really a framework for which investors can allocate their portfolios. The liquidity strategy is to help protect you and your family for a period of 3 to 5 years for unforeseen events or where a bear market occurs. A longevity strategy, that part of the portfolio, will help you achieve your lifetime goals. You got a higher allocation of risk assets in that particular part of your portfolio, such as equities, that are likely to perform well over longer periods of time. And then you've got that legacy part of the portfolio, where you can really help impact the lives of others, by investing more aggressively. Once you basically look at it from that, or through that prism, the election is one more bump in the road, and it doesn't really basically displace that, those three L's, liquidity, longevity, and legacy. Now, I will say this, there will be time for tactical changes in the next few months. And that's when we get closer to the election. Let's talk about after Labor Day. And in those times, we expect that if it looks as if there is going to be a more clear and apparent result from the election, and again, this is after the conventions, we have published a list of equities that will help investors navigate a unified government scenario where either Biden wins with a Democratic Congress or Trump is reelected and the House surprises everyone and reverses to GOP control. That would be a surprise. But in either case, whether it be a unified government under Biden or a unified government under Trump, we do have in this report a stock list of individual securities where you can refer to. It's actually in a companion report, but it can be provided by your financial advisor. My only caution again is that it is still early. It's probably more appropriate to keep that in mind, keep the additional stock list available for reference, but not make any tactical decisions just yet.
Tom, thank you for that. And to your point, for our clients listening in, I do very much encourage you to have a conversation with your financial advisor if you would like to review that associated stock list with the Election Watch publication. Of course, we cannot discuss single securities on the Top of the Morning podcast, but the stock list is available for you now as a point of reference, and of course you can discuss that further with your financial advisor. So Tom, I know we've covered a lot of ground on the podcast today. Perhaps before we close out, can you spend a few moments just highlighting for us what national polling currently is pointing to as of today in terms of an outcome?
Yeah, sure thing. As of today, where we stand today, a unified government under Democratic control is the more likely outcome. Trump is trailing Biden in 6 states where he won by less than 4 percentage points. And in addition, he's lost ground in states where he only lost to Clinton on a narrow basis 4 years ago. So in a dozen states where it was reasonably close one way or another, he's actually lost ground. In terms of the Senate, the GOP is expected to pick up a seat in Alabama, where Doug Jones is facing a tough re-election fight. But Republican incumbents in Maine, North Carolina, Colorado, and Arizona are all running behind their GOP challengers. Pardon me, their Democratic challengers. GOP incumbents in Montana and Iowa are also facing tough opponents. So they're, at this point, Republicans are defending more seats than Democrats. And in a lot of those states where we thought it was going to be close, it looks like the Republican GOP incumbent is running behind the Democratic challenger. Much is going to depend, I think, on how quickly the U.S. economy rebounds and whether the pandemic loosens its grip, thereby allowing unemployment levels to come down from the nosebleed levels we've seen in the last couple of months. To the extent that happens, then the ability of the GOP contestants in these Senate races improves. If we have a resurgence of the virus and the economy effectively stalls out and the recovery that we had seen The nascent recovery we had seen over the course of the last 6 weeks begins to peter out, and it looks like it's going to be a longer haul than I think it basically favors the unified government I mentioned at the top.
Tom, really appreciate your time and your insights today. It was great catching up with you, and thank you for walking us through the latest Election Watch publication, and do look forward to having some follow-up conversations with you between now and Election Day.
Thanks, Dan. I look forward to it.
Thank you, Tom. And again, we have been joined today by Tom McLaughlin. Tom is the head of Fixed Income Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Before we close out, I would like to highlight again that there are many publications available for you now up on UBS Online Services. And that, of course, includes the latest edition of the ongoing Election Watch publication series, title of which is Preparing Portfolios for November. Now, for UBS clients, as always, please reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of the most recent Election Watch publication directly. And as I pointed out at the top of the podcast, the Election Watch publication, as well as additional related resources, can now be located on ubs.com/Election Watch. Top of the Morning, we'll be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone. Time frames may vary. Strategies are subject to individual client goals, objectives, and suitability. This approach is not a promise or guarantee that wealth or any financial results can or will be achieved.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.